The following episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast deals with serious and sensitive topics. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome back to Lyrics of Their Life, the podcast that talks about the extraordinary lives lived by those that wrote or performed the songs we know and love. I'm your host Adam Hampton, and in today's episode, we jump right back into the Meatloaf story where we left off, as Meat and Jim Steinman look set to team up once again with the Dead Ringer album. As Meatloaf experiences more ups and downs in his career and life, before an epic comeback in the early 90s cements him as a legend of the music industry. All that and more in this episode. So without further ado, let's get straight into it. This is the story of Meatloaf Part 3. This is Lyrics of Their Life.
Prince has died at the age of 57.
This is it.
Sorry, Gary, but I was always the talented member of the band.
Keep booing, little girl. I will hit a man with glasses.
I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
Former Beatle John Lennon, who was 40, was shot and killed last night outside his luxury apartment in New York.
Has-beens shouldn't present fucking awards to Gonna Be.
On the 4th of September 1981, Meatloaf with Jim Steinman would release their second studio album together, titled Dead Ringer, under Epic Records. The album would feature 8 tracks and an epic piece of artwork on the front cover, which was designed by the horror and comic book illustrator Bernie Wrightson, as a nude man can be seen straddling a wild sea monster, riding it through the ocean as he holds a large red flag, reading Meatloaf on the front, as 3 nude women can be seen clinging onto the man. The album Dead Ringer would peak at number 1 on the UK and Swedish charts, 2 in New Zealand, 5 in Australia, 8 in Germany, and only made it to number 46 in the US. Sadly, the album was deemed a flop by the critics in the US, such as Rolling Stone magazine, who gave it only 2 out of 5 stars. These reviews were backed up by weak performing singles commercially. However, Dead Ringer remains a very underrated album to this day, and remains a fan favourite, with awesome tracks like I'm Gonna Love Her for the Both of Us, Read 'Em and Weep, Everything Is Permitted, I'll Kill You If You Don't Come Back, Dead Ringer for Love, and Peel Out, which actually features vocals from Meat's wife Leslie. 4 singles were released from the album, with the lead single, I'm Gonna Love Her for the Both of Us, released during September 1981, which sees Meat's character coming in to rescue a mistreated woman from a man who doesn't realise how lucky he is to have her in the first place. Sadly, this track failed to crack the top 40 worldwide, coming in at number 62 in the UK and 84 in the US. During October 1981, Meatloaf, with his band The Neverland Express, hit the road on the Dead Ringer tour, with pianist Paul Jacobs joining them, as the American songwriter would become a key figure for Meatloaf going forward. While other rock stars were out picking up chicks and partying, Meatloaf was quite the opposite, and while he dabbled in party drugs like cocaine, he was actually more of a recluse and admitted that he suffered badly from social anxiety, as he said, quote, "I never meet anybody much in a social situation, because when I go into a social situation, I have no idea what to do. The idea of social situations with friends, such as parties, absolutely freaked Meatloaf out. While Meatloaf also avoided going out with his fellow bandmates after gigs, and instead he just preferred to hang out with them while they were hard at work in the studio, as he liked to separate his private life with his career. While Meat claims that being bullied for his weight at school may have contributed to his social issues, he also said, quote, "Being too fat to play with the other children, I had to spend a lot of time alone, which probably has a lot to do with the way I am today. I'm usually alone in my hotel room from right after the show until the next day's soundcheck, and I'm never bored. I don't get bored, probably because mothers wouldn't let their kids play with me." The next track released on Dead Ringer during November 1981 was titled Dead Ringer for Love, and featured the one and only Cher in a duet with Meatloaf. The old-fashioned style rock and roll song was originally intended for the comedy TV show Delta House, but was altered and added to the Dead Ringer album. The song sees Meatloaf's character coming to the realization that the beautiful woman that just walked into the bar, played by Cher, is much more important to him than beer and rock and roll, as Meatloaf and Cher sing the catchy and cheeky chorus back and forth to each other, singing rock and roll and brew, rock and roll and brew, they don't mean a thing when I compare 'em next to you. Despite featuring in the music video for Dead Ringer for Love, Cher would actually never perform the song live with Meatloaf, and it was often forgotten that Cher had even collaborated with him over the years for this very reason. Meatloaf actually first met Cher back in 1973 while doing the Rocky Horror Show, however, they never really had much to do with each other. While Dead Ringer for Love was the clear standout track from the album, making its way to number 3 in Ireland and 5 in the UK, Dead Ringer for Love had also failed to chart at all in the US, where Meatloaf had now seemingly been left to the wayside, which hurt him a lot. However, his popularity in the UK kept him relevant. The third single from the Dead Ringer album was also released during November 1981 in the US and March 1982 in the UK, and was titled Read 'em and Weep, as the haunting and sad rock ballad sees Meatloaf's character attempting to find the words to write a heartfelt letter to his ex-lover, as he struggles with their recent breakup. The lyrics in the song are incredibly underrated and brilliant, as Jim Steinman writes, "If I could find the words, then I would write it all down. If I could only find a voice, I would speak. Oh, it's there in my eyes, so you can't see me tonight. Come on and look at me and read 'em and weep. I've been whispering softly, trying to build a cry up to a scream. We let the past slip away and put the future on hold. Now the present is nothing but a hollowed out dream." Despite these incredible lyrics from Jim Steinman and Meatloaf producing a touching performance vocally, Read 'em and Weep failed to chart worldwide. Instead, in 1983, Barry Manilow would cover the song with altered lyrics and take it to number 1 on both the Canadian and US adult contemporary charts, as well as number 17 in the UK and 18 on the US mainstream charts. More bad news would follow when Peel Out was released as a European single. However, it also failed to chart, as pressure from Meatloaf's label Epic Records began to mount. During December 1981, Meatloaf performed on Saturday Night Live with Tim Curry from the Rocky Horror Show in a skit titled The One-Stop Rocky Horror Shop, before Meatloaf and the Neverland Express performed Bat Out of Hell and a track called Promised Land, originally by Chuck Berry. Meatloaf and the Neverland Express continued to tour throughout 1982, travelling across Europe, the UK, and the US, performing on the same bill as Foreigner at Rock Pop Festival, and wrapping the tour up around May 1982. As the tour came to an end, talks from management and their label Epic Records would begin about Meatloaf and Jim Steinman coming together again to produce a third studio album. However, Epic Records executives had lost faith in Jim Steinman due to Dead Ringer's failures. Not that they ever had much faith in him to begin with, as media rumours began to circulate that they were set to move Jim on and just have Meatloaf on the credits as a band name, as initially feared during signing their first contract with Epic. Despite this, Jim continued on with writing the third album, coming up with the soon-to-be hit tracks Total Eclipse of the Heart and Making Love Out of Nothing at All, both of which were set to be sung by Meatloaf. However, when Jim was officially told he wasn't in Epic's plans for this upcoming album, he pulled the two songs and went on to start collaborating with other artists who would appreciate his work. Once the news finally got to Meat that Jim was set to work with other artists, this would cause a rift between them as their arguments intensified and they failed to find a resolution. Jim had simply had enough of the constant rejection and disapproval of his writing style by Epic Records, especially after the success of Bat Out of Hell, and while not entirely Meat's fault, Jim had finally had enough of Epic Records favouring Meatloaf and feeling underappreciated, so he walked away from Meatloaf and the proposed third album. Left to pull a new album ASAP, literally out of his ass, a panicked Meatloaf, who was still contractually obliged under Epic Records to release a third album right away, immediately went on a wild goose chase to find songwriters who could collaborate with him and suit his style, which of course turned out to be quite a difficult search, leaving Meat to write some of the songs himself for the very first time. Eventually, Meatloaf managed to find various songwriters to help him with his album, with Steve Burslow, Paul Christie, Mark Doyle, Paul Jacobs, and even his own wife, Leslie Adai, joining him, among others, as Leslie with Steve Burslow wrote the song Wolf at Your Door. Recording for the new album would begin during October 1982, with producer Tom Dowd, as they would wrap up production during February 1983. As Meatloaf looks set to release his third studio album, and first without Jim Steinman by his side, during February 1983, Jim Steinman began life without Meatloaf when Welsh singer Bonnie Tyler released her lead single from her fifth studio album, titled Total Eclipse of the Heart, the song Jim had initially wrote and intended for Meatloaf. However, the pop-rock power ballad couldn't be more suited to Bonnie Tyler's voice, as the track would prove to be one that got away for Meatloaf, soaring up the charts to number one in 8 countries, including Australia, the UK, and the US, becoming Jim Steinman's most successful song so far, and remaining a hugely popular track to this day, with over 1 billion streams on Spotify, surpassing 1.2 billion views on YouTube, and selling around 6 million copies worldwide, which unfortunately for Meatloaf, trumped all of his singles so far. Jim Steinman would produce most of Bonnie Tyler's fifth studio album, titled Faster Than the Speed of Night, which rose to number one in 4 countries, including the UK, number 3 in Australia, and number 4 in the US, while he would also write the single Faster Than the Speed of Night, which became a hit in the UK. Making for a tough act to follow, the huge success of Total Eclipse would lead into the release of Meatloaf's third studio album, during April 1983, titled Midnight at the Lost and Found, with the album cover artwork for the first time featuring a black and white photograph of Meatloaf himself instead of an intricate piece of artwork. Despite seeing some success in Europe and the UK, where it peaked at number 7, the album failed to chart in the US and failed to make the top 50 in Australia. Meatloaf himself would look back with regret over this album, claiming he struggled to write the songs for it and that they were poor quality. While fans and critics both agreed that this was one of Meatloaf's worst albums of his career, with some critics calling the album lazy and a poor effort compared to the last two albums. As critic J.D. Considine wrote, quote, "I don't think I've ever heard a performer more desperately in need of a duet with Cher." Only three singles were released from the album from May through to September 1983, including If You Really Want To, Razor's Edge, and Midnight at the Lost and Found. Worldwide, they were all deemed to be flops, with Midnight at the Lost and Found the best performing single, reaching number 17 in the UK, with Meatloaf having a hand in writing this track, as well as Razor's Edge. While Meatloaf's career started to spiral again, when Australian duo Air Supply would release the Jim Steinman-written track Making Love out of Nothing, and just like Total Eclipse of the Heart, it would become a huge hit and yet another track that slipped right through Meatloaf's fingers and could have been his. Making Love would become a huge hit in the US, reaching number 2 on their Cashbox Top 100, Adult Contemporary, and Billboard Hottest 100 chart, and remains their second most streamed song on Spotify, with over 300 million streams. While at one stage during 1983, the two Jim Steinman songs, for Bonnie Tyler and Air Supply, sat at both number 1 and number 2 on the US Billboard chart, showing just how much he had been influential on the music scene at the time, and sadly, it was all without Meatloaf. Despite Jim's success, Meatloaf and the Neverland Express kicked off the Midnight at the Lost and Found tour during July through to September 1983, travelling across the US, UK and Europe, as well as appearing at two Monsters of Rock festivals in both Germany and the UK, performing on the same bill as Thin Lizzy, Whitesnake, Motorhead, Blue Oyster Cult, Dio, Twisted Sister, and ZZ Top. And while the tour had been going well, more issues would spring up, when Meatloaf was let go of by Epic Records, and would be hit with over 45 lawsuits, totaling $80 to $85 million by his label and management. Some of these had even been filed by Jim Steinman himself. However, Meatloaf often played this down as something their managers had done. Due to his poor financial state, Meatloaf wasn't able to afford to pay his legal fees and fines, and instead decided to file for bankruptcy, as the former chart topper had reached rock bottom. Due to the bankruptcy, Meatloaf would lose the rights to his own songs and felt ashamed for dragging his family into this mess. As Meat said, quote, "When I declared bankruptcy, they said, it's not like this big scourge, but it was a big scourge. It was horrible. The kids took a beating. My wife would try to write a check at the grocery store and they wouldn't take it, even though it was fine. So I just worked. I always have. No big deal." While Leslie Adai told Behind the Music, quote, "We were like deadbeats, we were bums, overnight like that, and we didn't stop working, we didn't stop paying our bills. I actually had to borrow money from my parents. My father was a Navy man from 1930 to 1970, and now retired and living on a pension. I had to borrow money from him in order to pay for my groceries for my children." Meat would file for bankruptcy and lost everything, as they couldn't even afford bills like electricity at times. Filing for bankruptcy was the only way to stop the unaffordable lawsuits from continuing to flow in. During this time, Meatloaf spent a lot of it with his family, spending quality time with his daughters, Pearl and Amanda, claiming that he couldn't have made it through without their love and support. As Amanda Adai would later tell Behind the Music, quote, "No matter what's going on, you know, business-wise, entertainment-wise, he's always there for me." It was during this time in early 1984 that Meatloaf also decided to make a lifelong altering decision, to change his birth name legally from Marvin Lee Adai to Michael Lee Adai, as he applied to the courts to legally change it. As Meatloaf, in an interview with Piers Morgan, would tell the story of why he decided to change his name, as one traumatic event as a 7-year-old would change everything. As he said, quote, "When I was a kid, I was so big, I mean I was really big, that I literally could not wear blue jeans. And my mother would take me to Sears, and they didn't make blue jeans that would fit me, so I wore pleated pants in the first grade, and a commercial came on the air when I was about 5 or 6 years old, from Levi's, and the commercial was Poor Fat Marvin Can't Wear Levi's." After seeing this commercial, and from that point on, Meatloaf refused to be called Marvin, and instead preferred to be called Meat, ML, or Meatloaf. At the time of this, Meat says it brought him to tears, and that he had to shop in the men's section because he was so big. From that day forward, he would never wear Levi's, as it was that traumatic, so much so that it was enough to change his birth name. However, Meatloaf also claims that he hated the name before the commercial, and that the advertisement just made it, quote, 10 times worse. Meatloaf also claimed that in the past he did have the name Meatloaf written on his passport, but after being stuck in immigration in Germany for over 6 hours due to the confusion over his name, he had it removed and replaced by Michael Lee Adai. During an interview in 1984 with an Irish TV host named Gay Byrne on The Late Late Show, Byrne asked Meatloaf, quote, "You used to be fatter, what happened?" Shocked by the question, Meatloaf joked before claiming his management or record label forced him to lose weight, otherwise they would drop him from the label. As he answered by saying, quote, "I went through a period of injunctions for 10 months. They didn't want me to work, so very mean, nasty men put a 10-month injunction on me, and I like to concentrate on things. So what I did, I concentrated on not eating for about 7 months, and I lost about 90 pounds. I ate tomatoes with mustard." As Meat then sarcastically told the audience, quote, "It's a wonderful diet. You should try it, folks. I'm telling you, you can't miss."
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Meatloaf in person. Here he is now on a rare visit to this part of the country. Listen, what happened to you? You used to be fatter. How did you lose all the weight?
I beg your pardon?
You used to be fatter. P-H-I-T-T-T-E-O.
Oh, patter, patter. Oh, right. Patter, yeah. Patter.
What happened to you?
Well, I went through a period of injunctions for 10 months, which they didn't want me to work. And so people... very mean, nasty men,
right,
put a 10-month injunction on me, and I like to concentrate on things, so what I did was I concentrated on not eating for about 7 months, and I lost about 90 pounds.
And how? I mean, what did you not eat, and what did you eat?
I ate tomatoes with mustard.
Tomatoes with mustard?
It's a wonderful diet. You should try it, folks. I'm telling you, can't miss.
And what did you lose in the 10 months? How much?
About 90 pounds.
Did you really get away? Well, that's
one. I watched a lot of sports and ate tomatoes.
And did you take exercise during that time?
Yeah, I play racquetball and softball and sleep.
During this time, Meatloaf claims that he lost the 90 pounds by also playing racquetball and softball, with Meat claiming he's quite a good pitcher. From April through to August 1984, Meatloaf returned to the studio to produce and record his fourth studio album, titled Bad Attitude, after Meat signed a new recording contract with Arista Records. This would also be the second time recording and writing without Jim Steinman. Meatloaf at this stage was on talking terms again with Jim and attempted to get him to join him for the full album, but in Meatloaf's opinion, Jim seemed too busy and didn't get back to him within a reasonable amount of time, as Jim during this time had been working with the likes of Billy Squire, Ian Hunter, Barbara Streisand, and the soundtracks for the film Street of Fire and Footloose, with Jim writing, producing and composing the hit song Holding Out for a Hero by Bonnie Tyler, which after the film's success rose to number 1 in Ireland and 2 in the UK. However, it wasn't all going Jim's way when he was set to produce Def Leppard's fourth studio album, but he was instead fired and Mutt Lange was given the job over him, as Def Leppard with Mutt Lange went on to produce the hit album Hysteria. Instead, Meatloaf, Alan Shacklock, Paul Jacobs, and Reinhold Mack would all have a hand in producing Meatloaf's fourth studio album. However, you couldn't blame one for being envious of Jim's success. Then, by the 2nd of November 1984, Bad Attitude was released in the UK under Arista Records. However, just like the previous album, Midnight at the Lost and Found, it was deemed a commercial flop, with Bad Attitude only reaching number 8 in the UK and struggling to crack the charts elsewhere, falling to 42 in Australia and 74 in the US. Two Jim Steinman-written tracks that Meatloaf had kept up his sleeve were included on the album and were titled Surf's Up and Nowhere Fast, while Roger Daltrey of The Who would sing co-lead vocals on the track titled Bad Attitude. The two lead singles released included Nowhere Fast and Modern Girl. However, Nowhere Fast was exactly what these two lead singles did, with Modern Girl, the best of the two tracks, reaching number 17 in the UK, becoming more of a fan favourite. Two further singles followed in early to mid-1985, titled Piece of the Action and Surf's Up, but again, they failed to make an impact. By November 1984, Meatloaf and the Neverland Express again returned to the tour circuit to promote Bad Attitude, travelling to the UK, across Europe, and even to Australia, before wrapping the tour up in November 1985, around a year later. It was during this tour, in 1985, during a performance of All Revved Up with No Place to Go, that Meatloaf slid on his knees on the stage ramp, hoping to stop right before going off stage, or before crashing into the audience members below. However, his knee buckled as he attempted to stop himself from sliding too far, resulting in Meat having to wear a knee and leg brace for the remainder of the tour. In between touring, Meatloaf also tried his hand at comedy, working alongside Hugh Laurie on some comedy sketches, before performing in Connecticut on a number of occasions as a stand-up comedian. However, it wasn't a great success. Meanwhile, Jim Steinman continued to be successful in writing, composing, and producing the WWF theme song for Hulk Hogan's entrance theme. Jim would also produce tracks for the soundtrack for the film's Iron Eagle, and was also believed to have been approached by Andrew Lloyd Webber to write songs for the soundtrack for Phantom of the Opera, as Webber was said to have been interested in the way Steinman wrote about darker topics, which would have fared quite well with the themes of the Phantom of the Opera. However, Jim Steinman would decline this offer to work alongside Bonnie Tyler once again, as Bonnie Tyler's sixth studio album, titled Secret Dreams and a Forbidden Fire, which was released during April 1986, wasn't to be as successful as the previous Tyler albums, with Steinman having a hand in writing four tracks from the album, and it would prove to be his last with Tyler, as Desmond Child would produce her seventh album 2 years on from now. As Jim continued to work for a range of artists, Epic Records would put out the first Meat Loaf compilation album on the 14th of January 1985, titled Hits Out of Hell, determined to get a big payday and to see out Meat Loaf's contract officially. Meat Loaf hated the fact that this album was released without any of his own input. However, it was a huge success in the UK, where it reached number 2 and went double platinum. Then, later on during 1985, Meat Loaf starred in an episode for the TV show The Equalizer as a one-off character called Sugarfly Simon. This was before he appeared in a small role during July 1986 in a crime thriller film called Out of Bounds as a character called Gil. Furthermore, due to contractual obligations to Arista Records, Meat Loaf would be required to record and release 2 more albums to release him from his current contract, so along with a live album called Live at Wembley, Meat Loaf would release his 5th studio album on the 22nd of September 1986, titled I'll Go Blind Before I Stop, which of course was a reference to the critics who were telling him to give it up. Sadly, however, Meat Loaf struggled to prove them wrong when the album nosedived, becoming his least successful release so far. The album cover artwork featured Meat Loaf once again, while controversial producer Frank Farian would produce the 80s pop-inspired album, as Farian, of course, was known for producing and founding Milli Vanilli and Boney M. The album seemed to draw similarities and fuse the sounds of John Farnham, Billy Joel, Robert Palmer, and Phil Collins, and was far removed from Meat Loaf's usual rock and roll style of the past. The album completely failed to chart in Australia and the US, where Meat Loaf had seemingly lost most of his fan base there, becoming somewhat of a one-hit wonder, or a has-been. However, the UK and Europe hadn't completely forgot him yet, as he managed to chart within the top 30 in the UK, Switzerland, and Finland. Critics were quick to blame the writing style of the songs, and the fact that the key component, that is Jim Steinman, was still missing from the album, and that Meat Loaf desperately needed him back. Towards the end of the year, Meat Loaf would just perform a couple of times on TV, travelling to the UK, where he performed the songs Blind Before I Stop and Rock and Roll Mercenaries on Saturday Night Live. As Meat Loaf even picked up a guitar and played it, which of course was quite rare, as Meat Loaf himself admitted that he wasn't a great guitarist. From August 1986 to April 1987, 4 singles would be released from the album, including Rock and Roll Mercenaries, featuring John Parr on vocals, known best for his song St. Elmo's Fire, Man in Motion, with Meat Loaf even playing rhythm guitar on the track. However, the track would only make it to number 31 in the UK, and the one and only time that Meat Loaf and John Parr performed the song together live, in front of a packed Wembley Arena, John got upset with Meat Loaf, as Meat had forgotten to introduce him onto stage when it was time to sing the song. Instead, John would sing it, walk off stage, and would never ever speak to Meat Loaf again, despite Meat Loaf reaching out to apologise. Other singles released included Getting Away With Murder, Blind Before I Stop, and a cover version of A Special Girl, originally performed by Eddie Swartz. However, they all failed to chart or crack the top 50 worldwide. While other album tracks that stood out included One More Kiss and Execution Day, in which Meat Loaf had a hand in writing. Meat Loaf would later admit in his autobiography that he wished he didn't have to release this album, and that he could have just reunited with Jim Steinman sooner. Now that Meatloaf had fulfilled his contractual obligations with Arista Records, they chose to let him go and not renew his contract. After many years of underwhelming album releases, band members departing, and now without a record label or proper management, Meat's career looked down the toilet once again. As in Meatloaf's eyes, he now believed that he was a has-been and pretty much decided that was it. His career was over. His supportive wife Leslie, however, didn't think that he was done and encouraged him to get a new band and tour again. And thanks to her encouragement, during 1987, Meatloaf stopped feeling sorry for himself and took her advice, as he hired a new-look Neverland Express lineup and his wife Leslie booked the gigs and acted as his new manager. Sadly, Meatloaf had well and truly lost America at this point, from Midnight at the Lost and Found to Blind Before I Stop. He hadn't even bothered to distribute these albums to the US, as that's how low his popularity had become. On the other hand, the UK and Europeans still loved him and held a special appreciation for him, as he sure enough found out at the beginning of 1987, during February, when he began performing on the 2020 tour and Lost Boys and Girls tour at arenas, theatres and halls across the UK and Europe. The biggest hit to Meatloaf's ego, however, was when he returned to gigs across the US for the Pubs and Clubs tour, as he was shocked by the small venues that had a 500-person capacity limit as he struggled to fill these gigs up. But Meatloaf was persistent, and slowly but surely, the sizes of his crowds and the venues grew and grew, as Meat would tour well into 1991, going on the road for over 4 years, even performing at Nelson Mandela's tribute concert on the 11th of June 1988 at Wembley Stadium in London. In contrast to his much smaller gigs at the Boathouse in Norfolk, Virginia, or the University of Lowell, Massachusetts, and then to supporting the Allman Brothers at Madison Square Garden in New York. Despite the emotional rollercoaster, the hurdles and the smaller crowds in the US, Meatloaf claimed that this tour actually revitalized him and was the most fun that he had ever had since becoming an artist. Not to mention, his home life was quite positive, and when he wasn't on the road touring, he enjoyed coaching Amanda and Pearl's Little League baseball and softball teams in Stamford, Connecticut, while also cheering on his favourite baseball team in the major leagues, the New York Yankees. Meatloaf had actually coached his daughters for years, beginning with Amanda, claiming that coaching helped him to get through losing his voice and gave him a sense of purpose and something to look forward to.
You may wonder exactly where I'm going. Well, I'm not going to a rock and roll concert, and I'm not going to the studio. I was in the studio last night. But today where I'm going is I'm going to coach my team. It's 13 kids who are 10 to 12 years old, and they're a little league team. And that's where I'm off to today. It's sort of rare, you know, that a rock and roll star or anybody in the entertainment field wants to get involved with kids, especially this early in the morning. But I do. And let's go out to the field. Let's go meet the kids, all right? It's been a lifelong dream, actually, to be able to coach in Little League. It's an emotional game. That's what I try to do with the Little Leaguers, you know? It's like, you get them going on an emotional level, they'll like, you know, work for you, you know. I used to rent cars when I was in Manhattan and go into Staten Island to watch the Little Leaguers play baseball on the weekends. And it used to irritate me so much that it was more for the coaches, you know, than for the kids. And they would like scream at the kids and curse at the kids, and the kids would make a mistake. They wouldn't tell the kids, hey, that's all right, you know, shake it off, you know, don't worry about that. Let's worry about, you know, the next play. Just relax, okay? And don't try to overthrow. Remember, you got good defense out there. Just let them go for it, okay? All right, guys, we're doing it all the way now. Let's go. Come on. We need it this time. We got to go all the way.
With Meatloaf wrapping up his touring schedule around June 1991 in the US, over the past 4 years, he had also been busy on other projects, such as acting, starring in the 1987 film The Squeeze as the character Titus, and as the character Vern in the 1991 film Motorama. While in the world of TV, Meatloaf appeared on the charity TV event, the UK's Royal Grand Knockout Tournament, during 1987, with the live TV charity event drawing in 18 million viewers to watch celebrities and members of the royal family dressed as damsels, squires, and minstrels at a theme park, with the weird and strange event including royals messing about and prodding celebrities in the bottom, raising around £1.5 million for charity. Queen Elizabeth II was believed to have been left furious at the event by Meatloaf, making a mockery of the royals, as Meatloaf claimed that he upset the Queen when he attacked her controversial son, Prince Andrew. Meatloaf claims that during the event, Prince Andrew became agitated with him and appeared jealous, as Meatloaf was caught flirting with Andrew's then-wife, Sarah Ferguson. Andrew was believed to have threatened and even attempted to push Meatloaf into the moat for flirting with Fergie, as Meatloaf retaliated, grabbing Andrew and screaming in his face, "I don't give a shit who you are," with Meatloaf explaining, quote, "Fergie wasn't exactly flirting with me, but she was paying attention to me, and I think Andrew got a little, I could be wrong, I'm just reading into this, I think he got a little jealous. Anyway, he tried to push me in the water. He tried to push me in the moat. So I turned around and I grabbed him, and he goes, 'You can't touch me, I'm royal.' I said, 'Well, you tried to push me in the moat, Jack, and I don't give a shit who you are. You're going in the moat.'"
Helen!
Meatloaf.
Here we are.
Indeed, and what are you doing
Helen,
here?
Helen, you look absolutely smashing.
Why, thank you. I do hope it lasts.
Yeah, it will last, you know, except for the shoes. You know what I mean?
All
right.
All right, so, now, whose team are you on?
The Duchess of York, Sarah Ferguson.
Did she pick you personally?
That's what they tell me.
Okay, so this is good fun, though, right?
Yeah, oh, it's unbelievable. I guess you're supposed to call her Royal Highness, but last night at dinner, she started to call me Meaty.
Yes.
And I said, well, okay, if you're going to call me Meaty, then what can I call you? So she said Flower. So now it's Meaty and Flower. I'm like, you know, this real kind of hip term here, you know what I mean?
Meatloaf also appeared in the 1988 TV show Monsters as Dr. Willard Wingate, while British label Telstar Records would release a compilation album during 1989 called Heaven and Hell, which included a range of both Bonnie Tyler and Meatloaf songs that were of course mostly written and produced by Jim Steinman. Despite seemingly like a good idea at the time, the album struggled to chart or sell well initially, but has gradually sold better over time. During Meat's touring years, Jim Steinman had also been busy working on the soundtrack to the 1988 film Rude Awakening, before forming his very own four-piece female pop group called Pandora's Box, including vocalist Ellen Foley, who had previously worked with Jim and Meatloaf on Bat Out of Hell, where their one and only album, titled Original Sin, was released during November 1989. The album wasn't overly a big success, despite reaching number one in South Africa, although some of the tracks on the album would go on to be big hits with other artists, including the likes of Celine Dion, who in 1996 released a cover of the Jim Steinman-written song It's All Coming Back to Me Now, which of course is now a worldwide famous hit. The album itself has that big boombastic sound typical of Jim Steinman, and you could almost hear Meatloaf singing the songs himself. While Meatloaf had been touring and Jim had been successfully working with other artists, a Christmas miracle, some would say, occurred during December 1990, when Meatloaf and Jim Steinman reconnected around Christmas time, mending their fractured relationship while singing songs like Bat Out of Hell by the piano at Meatloaf's family home in Connecticut, with the pair of them realizing they were better off together and not feuding. Over the Christmas and New Year period, the two came to the conclusion that they should work together again. As Jim said, quote, "Working together again seemed like the cool thing to do." And before you know it, the pair were back in the studio at Ocean Way Recording Studio in LA, after Jim had walked away from Meatloaf over 8 years ago. However, there was two conditions. Meatloaf had to fire his two managers, Walter Winnick and George Gilbert, in order for them to proceed, as Jim wasn't too confident that they would stay out of their way during the recording process. Agreeing to this, Meatloaf would let them go and bring in Alan Kovac as his new manager. One other factor that was concerning Jim so much was the fact that Meatloaf had lost around 80 pounds since the Bat Out of Hell album was released in the 70s, and looked significantly different, and was also now sporting short hair as opposed to his long sweaty locks of the past. Steinman claimed that he was so worried that the image of Meatloaf wouldn't be successful due to his weight loss that he even left donuts around the studio in hopes of beefing Meatloaf up, as he knew he couldn't resist a donut or two. Since 1981, Meatloaf had actually turned to being a vegetarian, which contributed significantly to losing so much weight. However, due to his name being, of course, Meatloaf, this at times gave people the wrong impression of him, as he said, quote, "There've been vegetarians who wouldn't speak to me because of my name. I was sitting with John Bon Jovi at one of those award things, and I say, 'Oh man, I love Katie Lang. I'd really like to meet her.' They went to find out if it was okay, and she goes, 'No, his name is Meatloaf.' I stopped being a Katie Lang fan after that." Meatloaf would actually return to eating meat products around 1991 to 1992, ending his 10-year run as a vegetarian. So perhaps Jim's plan to beef Meatloaf up actually worked, as he told The Guardian much later on in 2010, quote, "Even so, I am always wanting to lose weight, so I try to eat as much fish and vegetables as possible. Earlier this year, I wasn't eating much red meat at all. I was eating almost nothing but vegetables. I started to get tired and weak, and a doctor said to me, 'With your schedule, you need protein.' Well, I hate tofu, so I started eating meat again." Recording for the new album got underway in August 1991, and it would take until June 1993 to complete the album, as they secured a record deal with Virgin and MCA Records. And this time, Jim Steinman would produce the album all by himself. Meatloaf and Jim were believed to have had minor clashes, and one major one during the recording process of the song Life is a Lemon. However, they kept on rolling. Also returning were the likes of Kasim Sultan and Todd Rundgren on backing vocals, as well as Roy Bittan on piano. While new members to the Meatloaf sessions included Eddie Martinez and Tim Pierce on guitar, backing vocals by Rory Dodd, known best for being the male vocalist on Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart, and Kenny Aronoff on drums, just to name a few. As close to 40 different musicians appeared on the album, as it was a huge production, utilizing everything from bagpipes to saxophones. In the meantime, Meatloaf as an actor started landing a number of roles and would make cameos in three more films released in 1992, including the comedy cult classic Wayne's World as Tiny, Leap of Faith as Hoover, and The Gun in Betty Lou's Handbag as Lawrence. While he also appeared in three TV series, including in the action show Lightning Force as Richard Talbot, So act for Snapper as the voice of Snapper in the animated series, and in the HBO horror show Tales from the Crypt as Mr. Chumley. With production of studio album number 6 coming to a close, Jim and Meat would decide to name it Bat Out of Hell 2, signalling them reuniting and attempting to resurrect the success of Bat Out of Hell, which was released around 16 years ago at this point. Then, on the 31st of August, 1993, history would be made when the legendary power ballad I'd Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That was released to the world, featuring Meatloaf's powerful, spine-tingling, emotionally charged vocals, epic piano melodies by the returning Roy Bittan, co-lead vocals by female singer Lorraine Crosby, and guitar riffs by Tim Pierce and Eddie Martinez, the dramatic masterpiece would catapult Meatloaf back into the limelight and would go down as his big comeback song. As I'd Do Anything for Love rose up the charts, peaking at number 1 in a total of 28 countries, including Australia, the UK, US, Canada, and multiple European countries, including Germany. It would sell over 2 million copies worldwide and would become Meatloaf's most successful track of all time, and his very first number 1 record, and the only one of his career, in countries like Australia, the US, UK, and many more. I'd Do Anything for Love became the best-selling single of 1993 in the UK, where it spent 7 weeks at number 1. It would last 5 weeks at number 1 in the US, and it would earn Meatloaf his first and only Grammy Award of his career for Best Rock Vocal Performance Solo at the 1994 Annual Grammy Awards. The feat would go down as one of the biggest comebacks in music history, with the Grammy Award capping off his incredible revival, defeating the haters and critics that had always come down on him so hard. As Meatloaf told Behind the Music, quote, "Never thought in a million years I'd have a number one record. Never thought I'd win a Grammy." In the UK, it broke the Beatles' record for having the longest song in terms of duration at number one with Hey Jude, with I'd Do Anything for Love lasting for 7 minutes and 52 seconds. This record was later broken, however, by Oasis with their song All Around the World, which stands at 9 minutes and 38 seconds. And while I'd Do Anything for Love was so successful at the time, the single Bat Out of Hell would be reissued and released in the UK, rising up the charts to number 8 at the same time that I'd Do Anything for Love was still in the top 10. With just this one single, Meatloaf was well and truly back in a big way, especially in the US, where he had mostly been forgotten. In the height of the grunge wave, with bands like Nirvana, Pearl Jam and Soundgarden, and the rise of R&B and rap music on the popular charts, this was a completely left-field hit song, but the world just simply couldn't get enough of it. Rising above these popular bands and artists on the charts, it was simply everywhere, receiving mass airplay over the radio, and was only helped along by the epic music video that accompanied the song. Today, the radio edit for I'd Do Anything for Love is Meatloaf's most successful and most streamed song on Spotify, standing at over 261 million streams, while the extended version of the song stands at a further 55 million streams. While over on YouTube, the music video has been viewed over 318 million times. Not enough, if you ask me, with how great that clip is. The music video was directed by renowned film director Michael Bay and was hailed as a powerful artistic masterpiece that told a similar story to that of Beauty and the Beast, fused with Phantom of the Opera, as Meatloaf portrayed the beastly character but with a soft side, seen in the clip, alongside actress Dana Patrick. The music video was filmed in the LA County, in California, over four grueling hot summer days, with Meatloaf spending 2 hours a day in the makeup van, having the frightening-looking makeup applied to his face by makeup artist Bob Keane, with the mask itself being made out of rubber foam molds glued onto Meatloaf's face for shape, and then makeup artist Bob Keane would add paints for colour and effect. The worst part of all, however, was the painful experience that Meatloaf endured at the end of each day of shooting, when he had to peel off the mask that had been glued to his face. The music video for I'd Do Anything for Love would ultimately go over budget, costing $750,000, similar to that of a film. However, it was worth it in the end, as it was heavily played on MTV and remains one of the best music videos of all time. Despite its success, I'd Do Anything for Love would be shockingly shunned and put down by most critics, and at times, it has been included to this day in lists of greatest songs and worst songs of all time. The line or title of the track, I'd Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That, actually came from a song that Jim Steinman had produced for Bonnie Tyler in a song written by Alan Gruner called Getting So Excited for the 1983 album Faster Than the Speed of Night. One question often asked about the lyrics, however, was what exactly was that Meatloaf or the character singing I'd Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That actually meant. What exactly was that? Meatloaf claimed that it was the most common question that he was always asked, and that he thought it was quite obvious, despite Jim Steinman's doubts over whether people would get it, as the lyrics are quite complex and not clear-cut. However, in a 1998 episode of VH1 Storytellers, Meatloaf attempted to answer, what is that? However, to many it still remains mysterious or confusing. The character portrayed by Meatloaf claims in the song that they would never do anything to ruin their relationship or hurt the woman in question, claiming he would run to hell and back for her, and claiming that he would never lie or cheat, or at least so he says, as the character battles with their own contradictions and commitment issues. As Meatloaf claimed that at the start of every chorus, he tells the listener what he won't do, as he sings the line, I'll never forget the way you feel right now, but I won't do that. But I'll never forgive myself if we don't go all the way tonight, but I won't do that. But I'll never do it better than I do it with you, but I won't do that. But I'll never stop dreaming of you every night of my life, but I won't do that. See that it's time to move on, but I won't do that. Be screwing around, but I won't do that. Essentially, the male character portrayed by Meatloaf is telling the woman in question everything that he thinks she would like to hear or want to hear, as he continues to make a number of promises that deep down he knows he can't keep and that he won't really follow through with anyway. Despite seemingly loving her, he can't commit to her fully, and is essentially a liar, who can't resist temptation to cheat, or even be honest with himself and leave the relationship. He could do anything for love, but he won't do that. As Jim Steinman said about the song, quote, what he won't do is said about 6 times in the song, very specifically. It's sort of a little puzzle, and I guess it goes by, but they're all great things. I won't stop doing beautiful things, and I won't do bad things. It's very noble. I'm very proud of that song, because it's very much like Out of the World of Excalibur. To me, it's like Sir Lancelot, or something. Very noble and chivalrous. That's my favourite song on the record. It's very ambitious. Sadly for the female co-lead vocalist, Lorraine Crosby, she would be left off of the credits for the track, receiving no royalties, and would be known on the album as Mrs. Loud. The poor treatment of Lorraine would leave a foul taste in her mouth about Meatloaf going forward. While in the initial stages, it was said that Melissa Etheridge, Cher, and Bonnie Tyler were all approached to sing on the track instead of Crosby, but they all declined. Lorraine Crosby was a club singer that Steinman had been managing, and she was set to only feature during jam sessions. However, they decided to go with her voice, as Crosby said, quote, "I went and sang it twice, and I never thought anything more of it until 6 months later when I got a phone call saying, 'Would you mind if we used your vocals?'" While funnily enough, adventurer, TV presenter, and former SAS member Bear Grylls actually credits this song for inspiring him to join the SAS, as he said, quote, "Enthusiasm and determination count for so much more than skills, brains, or qualifications, and all this expressed itself to me through Meatloaf's song. With I'd Do Anything for Love rising up the charts around the world, on the 14th of September 1993, Meatloaf and Jim Steinman would release their third album together and Meatloaf's sixth studio album, titled Bat Out of Hell 2, Back Into Hell, under Virgin and MCA Records. Like the lead single I'd Do Anything for Love, Bat 2 would be a huge hit and signalled Meatloaf's big comeback, with the album rising up the charts and peaking at number one in 10 countries, including Australia, the UK, New Zealand, Canada, the US, and in European countries such as Sweden and Germany. The album would go 5x platinum in the US, selling close to 5 million copies there, while worldwide, Bat 2 sold over 14 million copies. The album cover artwork would this time around be produced by Michael Whelan, based off of the first Bat Out of Hell cover by Richard Corbin, and would feature a motorcycle and its rider plunging through the sky, headed straight back into hell, hence the title of the album, as a large demonic bat-looking creature sits atop of the New York City Chrysler Building. While critics were harsh on the album, with magazines such as Rolling Stone giving it just 2 out of 5 stars, the public ate it up, which Meatloaf claims he knew calling it Bat Out of Hell 2 would help sell, quote, shitloads. Jim Steinman, on the other hand, had been working on this album since the original Bat Out of Hell tour was coming to an end, and claimed, quote, "I didn't call it Bat Out of Hell 2 just to identify with the first record. It really does feel like an extension of that. It was a chance to go back to that world and explore it deeper. It always seemed incomplete because I conceived it like a film. And what would you do without Die Hard 2? The second single released from Bat 2 was titled Life is a Lemon and I Want My Money Back, which was released on the 25th of October 1993. While it wasn't a mainstream pop hit worldwide, it was successful on radio and made it to number 17 on the US mainstream rock chart. The pessimistic song was written by Jim Steinman about how life is flawed and in some cases a rip-off, controlled by rich elites who allow the rest of the world's population to, quote, "slip through the cracks and battling their whole lives just to die in the end," and, quote, "fade to black." Meanwhile, Jim also points out that there are many other things that are defective and don't quite live up to the hype or how people make them seem, which relates to life being a, quote, "lemon," a phrase often used when purchasing, say, a car that looks great, but once you drive it away it ends up being full of issues and defective, essentially saying, "I didn't sign up for this, and I demand a refund or a do-over, in a better, fairer world," as Jim brilliantly fuses the serious topics addressed in the song with humour, making it appear more light-hearted and radio-friendly, as Meatloaf sings the lines, "and all the morons, and all the stooges with their coins, they're the ones who make the rules. It's not a game, it's just a rout, and we're always slipping through the cracks. Then the movie's over, fade to black. Life is a lemon, and I want my money back." Meatloaf goes on to mention that the following things in life are all defective and not built to last, comparing life to something that can be bought from a shop that takes batteries and dies. As he sings, "What about love? It's defective. It's always breaking in half. What about sex? It's defective. It's never built to really last. What about your family? It's defective. All the batteries are shot. What about your friends? They're defective. All the parts are out of stock. What about hope? It's defective. It's corroded and decayed. What about faith? It's defective. It's tattered and it's frayed. What about your gods? They're defective. They forgot the warranty. What about your town? It's defective. It's a dead end street to me. What about your school? It's defective. It's a pack of useless lies. What about your work? It's defective. It's a crock and then you die. What about your childhood? It's defective. It's dead and buried in the past. What about your future? It's defective and you can shove it up your ass." During a 1993 interview with Larry King, Larry asked why there'd been 17 years between the two hit albums, Bat Out of Hell 1 and Bat 2, as Meat replied, quote, "In 1979, I just didn't agree with everything that was going on at that point of my life. I didn't enjoy being a celebrity, and I didn't come into this business to be a celebrity, and I didn't even think about it happening to me. I didn't like it. And then because we sold so many records initially, everything became about money, and I am not really in it to be a celebrity or to make money. I like the work, so I quit." When talking to Galaxy Con, Meat always insisted that the fans are what make the artist, and said, quote, "The fans are everything. Anybody that's in my position owes everything to the fans. The fans are responsible for building the road that someone in my position has been able to walk down, and every artist should be eternally grateful for each and every one of their fans." As Meatloaf would state in a later interview, quote, "But believe me, there will not be a night I ever walk through a show. I'll die for you. I literally will die for an audience. The best thing that could ever happen to me is that I die on stage, because then I'm dying doing what I love." The third single to be released from Bat Out of Hell 2 was titled Rock and Roll Dreams Come Through, which was released on the 24th of January 1994. The song speaks of the healing power of music, and most notably, rock and roll. Previously, it was performed and released as a single on Jim Steinman's Bad for Good album, the year that Meatloaf lost his voice. Meatloaf's version would beat Steinman's in terms of charting positions in a range of countries, including making it to number 4 in Canada, 11 in the UK, and 13 in the US. However, he would equal Jim's version at number 18 in Australia and number 6 in New Zealand. Released as the fourth and final single from Bat Out of Hell 2 would be the haunting rock ballad, Objects in the Rearview Mirror May Appear Closer Than They Are, which was released on the 14th of April 1994. While remaining a popular fan favourite and an underrated masterpiece, Rearview Mirror would be the least successful single from the album, peaking at number 26 in both the UK and Canada, 38 in the US, and 52 in Australia. The album version of the song would last for over 10 minutes and was split into three sections, which included the seasons of summer, winter, and spring. Jim Steinman claims it was the last song to be written for the album and that it was in some ways the most difficult, due to the nature of the lyrics being described as, quote, gruesome, as he continued by stating on his own website that it was also a song he was very proud of, as he said, quote, "It's a very passionate song. It's really, I think maybe, the most passionate one on the record, because that's really one that goes over the top in the sense that it's got images. It has religious imagery of resurrection. It's got images of fertility and rebirth. It has really very good sexual images, images of cars, which I always like. During the song, Meatloaf would brilliantly deliver the lyrics with purpose and passion, while Jim would provide us with beautiful poetic lines, which include, "And if life is just a highway, then the soul is just a car." During the song, Meatloaf can be heard singing about three ghostly figures, which include his best friend Kenny, who died in a fiery crash, his drunken and abusive father, and an ex-lover. The phrase, "objects in the rearview mirror, may seem closer than they are," refers to the warning label that is often found on left and right rearview mirrors, and is symbolic of tragedies such as losing a friend, abuse at the hands of a parent, or losing a lover, and that time can often be distorted, that these feelings take a long time to heal from, and that they can stick with you for a lifetime, yet feel like it was just yesterday, or so long ago, yet still affect you in the present day. Meatloaf would often be questioned on if this song was autobiographical, as it dealt with real-life issues related to his past. However, Meatloaf strongly denied this. This, of course, is despite much of the lyrics coincidentally tying in with his life, especially the relationship he had with his often drunken father, while the music video itself depicts a younger Meatloaf attending his friend's funeral, only for the next scene to roll into the abuse at the hands of his father, which does raise the question if this was symbolic of the time that Meat arrived home from his mother's funeral only to be attacked by his drunken father wielding a knife, only to run from the home and set out on his own, as the lyrics also read, "And when the sun descended and the night arose, I heard my father cursing everyone he knows. He was dangerous and drunk, and defeated, and corroded by failure, and envy and hate. There were endless winters, and the dreams would freeze, nowhere to hide, and no leaves on the trees. And my father's eyes were blank, as he hit me again, and again, and again. I know I still believe he'd never let me leave, I had to run away alone. So many threats and fears, so many wasted years, before my life became my own. And though the nightmares should be over, some of the terrors are still intact. I'll hear that ugly, coarse and violent voice, and then he grabs me from behind, and then he pulls me back." Other standout tracks from the Bat Out of Hell 2 album included the likes of Lost Boys and Golden Girls, Out of the Frying Pan and Into the Fire, and Good Girls Go to Heaven, Bad Girls Go Everywhere. From here, Meatloaf would embark on the Bat Out of Hell 2 tour, as well as the Everything Louder tour, from 1993 through to December 1994, as he toured across Europe, the US, Canada, and the UK, and after once supporting Cheap Trick earlier in his career, now Cheap Trick were Meatloaf's support act at a number of gigs around the US. Meatloaf would also begin introducing his family to his world when during this tour, Meatloaf's adoptive daughter Pearl, now aged around 20, would sing on backing vocals. During the year 1994, on the 12th of July, Meatloaf would perform a fantastic rendition of the Star Spangled Banner at the All-Stars baseball game in Pittsburgh, which for Meatloaf was a massive honour for the baseball enthusiast, as the American League faced off against the National League.
Rampart we watched were so
Then, as 1995 rolled around, Meatloaf, along with his now 14-year-old daughter Amanda, would star in the film To Catch a Yeti.
When we catch this Yeti, I'm set for life.
Meatloaf's career and personal life were finally on the up, and both in positive places, as Meat and Jim would enjoy all the love and praise that was coming their way. What the next 25 years or so would serve up would be nothing short of interesting, however. On the final part of the Meatloaf story, Meatloaf tries his hand at reality TV, attempts to capitalise on the commercial success of Bat Out of Hell 2, he battles health concerns along with critics, and, along with Jim Steinman, they take their final bow before leaving this world for good. As we pay tribute to these two legends of the music industry and the legacy that they left behind. And that wraps up this episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast. Thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If this is your first time tuning into our show, don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss our future episodes. And if you're really enjoying the show, a quick rating or review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts goes a long way in helping us to grow. If you would like to follow the podcast, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, X, and TikTok at Lyrics of Their Life Podcast, or on our website at lyricsoftheirlife.com for updates and more. If you'd like to support the podcast further and help keep episodes like this coming, you can head over to my Patreon at patreon.com/lyricsoftheirlifepodcast, or you can buy me a coffee over at buymeacoffee.com/lyricsoflifepod. Every bit of support means the world to me and helps make episodes like this one possible. Whether you're a long-time listener or just discovering the show for the first time, thank you for being here and supporting the show in whatever form that comes in. Thanks again for listening. I'm your host, Adam Hampton, and this is Lyrics of Their Life.